Hello, listeners, watchers, subscribers, and fans, and welcome to the SDR Disco Call Show. My name is Neil Buyan, and I'm your host. If this is your first time joining, or if you're coming back for another dose of SDR Disco Call fun, this show is all for sales development reps or people working in the world of tech sales and business development. And what we like to do is meet interesting and cool people to see how did they kind of get into this career, what advice would they give to people thinking about entering tech sales, you know, learning more about their journeys, and I'm your host. And with these two guests, these are people that actually approached me and got into my DMs and spoke about how they've been listening to the show and watching the show and they'd like to come on board and share their stories. But as a gentle reminder, if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform or you're watching this on YouTube, please make sure that you give us a like, comment, subscribe, and share. And if you want to comment down below or ask our guests any questions and reach out to them, feel free to do so. So I'm going to come over to Umro number one. James, could you please introduce yourself? Who are you, sir? Where are you based in the world? And what do you do?
Thanks, Neil. My name's James. I'm the business development manager here at Kantata, based in London. I've been leading the team for over a year now. I like to get out, travel, go to the gym, socialize, drink a pint of Guinness or two.
Ooh.
Just enjoying the London life, really.
Can't get better than that's a strong intro, dude. I love that. Thank you very much. And Mr. Edwards, Ollie, could you please introduce who are you? Where are you from? What do you do? And also, could you give us a little bit of an insight as to what your company does?
Of course. Thanks ever so much, Neil. Hi, all. I'm Ollie Edwards. So I'm the senior enterprise BDR at Kantata. I've been here a year, a couple of weeks ago, actually. So not too long in the business or in sales. What do I like to do outside of work? Advocate for football, play it, watch it, try my arm at golf very badly. So I like keeping the greenkeepers at work. And same as James, really, socializing, having a few bevvies after finishing the graft.
I love that strong intro, gents, and thank you so much for joining in today's show. And funny you said Guinness, I've literally just come back from Dublin, Ireland from a week of SaaStock, and I didn't touch one Guinness. I don't know what it was. Everybody was telling me that, Neil, you need to really taste the Guinness out there. But when people tell me what to do, I don't want to do it. So maybe I need to make up.
It is so much better out there, though, Neil.
I've heard like they were banging on about it. But what we like to do at this point of the show is kind of come to your LinkedIn profiles to get a bit of an insight as to your backgrounds, where you've been and where you've come from. And obviously, this time around of the show, this is what I really love about these episodes. We've got a dynamic duo here, ladies and gents. So we've got somebody who works within management and somebody who is an individual contributor as well. So we've got a little bit of stories to go and figure out, but we'll try and keep this short, sweet, and brief so we can really get down into the actual conversation as well. But James, with yourself, like having a quick through on your LinkedIn, you've kind of worked in quite a lot of different experiences. So, you know, MDs, I love that. Working within human resources, being a BD, and then Kantata as well. In 2 minutes, could you just like kind of give us the main headlines, James, as to like how did you get into sales and kind of like how did you get to where you are today, sir?
Yeah, I think I really found sales in a way that kind of came from the fact that HR wasn't really providing me with the kind of the people and relationship building elements that I was looking for in business.
Yeah.
So went to uni, studied business management, really enjoyed the kind of the learning about how organizations and people are managed. And when I was kind of working in HR, I felt like I was a little bit at the back of the business instead of the front of the business. And I think with the relationship building skills that I had and the real core interest in how business and businesses work together, plus the fact that I wanted to make a bit of money, there was a desire there to kind of explore other avenues. Did a bit of research for about 6 months or so into kind of did some informational interviews, spoke to a couple of people in the industry, And as a result of that, landed my first job at Tempo as a business development executive there. And then made the move over to Kantata 6 months later and started out as a BDR here, moving up to management a year later.
Boom. Thank you very much, James. And there's some definite things that I do want to ask you within today's episode, but kind of around those points as well. And so thank you for that. And for Ollie, kind of similar to yourself, could you kind of like in 2 minutes give us, you know, the headlines as to like, how did you get into sales and how did you get up to where you are today?
Yeah, so actually quite similar to James from the HR point, but really went to uni, did criminology degree, very much trying to follow going into criminal law, which I initially wanted to do. Came out of that and realized that that wasn't the route for me. So almost fell into a HR systems role through someone I know, which was great. Working for quite a big company, very corporate company, but learned a lot of lessons along the way there. And actually then it got to the point where I'd moved to London. It was a chance to branch out and see what was available. And always had a bit of a fancy towards sales. But it was actually a close friend of mine who was at Kantata, doing really well, who sort of encouraged me and pushed me to go. So that then brought me to go through the interview process. Loved sort of the people that I was chatting to and where I wanted to get to. And that's where back September I made the jump and the risk, which I'm sure I'll touch on later.
Yep.
And sort of have a look back into where I am now.
I love that, dude. And just out of curiosity, criminology and then obviously coming into sales, what was the story behind criminology? Why did you want to get into that? And are there any synergies that you see with what you were studying in terms of kind of what you're doing today, just out of curiosity?
Great question. For me, it was come out of sixth form straight into, wanted to go to university and always wanted to, I was fascinated by criminal law. So it was very much tunnel vision towards that route. But heard stories from a couple of friends and the paralegal route. And actually it's a long, long way to get where you need to be. Which I think that made me turn and that coupled with the famous gap year traveling made me realize actually let's come back. And then that's when I took on an accountant and finance master degree to get me back on course. I think to your initial question around synergies, I don't think I could get away with saying criminology is like sales, but I think there's certainly some lessons there around how people think and more of the sociology side. In terms of how to speak to people and how to negotiate and get what you want, which is probably the closest takeaway I could probably lean on.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing, Ollie. So James, coming back to yourself, so you're somebody that, you know, stated you worked within HR systems and you weren't getting really what you wanted when you were like kind of in the back end side of things, right? And then you're coming through into this sort of world where you were a BDR at Kantata and then you've moved up into management. Curious to know, like, what was your motivations? Well, actually, let me answer the question another way. Were you always aiming to go into management, or was there kind of like a point where you thought, right, management's the way I wanted to go after an experience? How did that work?
Good question. I think I, when I worked at McDonald's, I was leading a department there and was kind of a shift manager there. And I think that was my first real experience of kind of management and team leadership. So thoroughly enjoyed it. So I kind of always knew that I had that kind of that ability and that kind of desire to kind of get into management eventually. I originally wanted to become an account executive when I first started, and that was kind of the desire and the route that I wanted to go down, with the eventual aim of getting into management after that that closing experience. And then I came into the BDR role and found a real passion for business development and a real love for it. And I think the craft was just kind of the way that you have to craft and kind of adapt and make yourself dynamic to kind of suit the needs of a prospect and the ever-changing demands of the market, was just fascinating to me. So, that combined with the fact that one of my manager at the time took some extended leave, and I kind of took up a bit of a team lead, just stepped up into a bit of a team lead role.
Yeah.
And with the growth of the organization and our sales enablement function, the opportunity to actually then manage the team came along.
Yeah.
And it just felt like the natural, it felt like the natural next step. And yeah, I haven't looked back. So the desire wasn't there when I first initially became a BD rep.
Yeah.
But I think combining the passion and the love that I found for BD, but also being able to share that and lead a team with that kind of passion, it felt natural to come take a step into management.
I love that. Thank you. I'm going to come back onto that point in a moment about, you know, taking on that team lead initial start kickoff before you went fully full blown down onto the management road, because I got a question this week from somebody I think you might be able to help out on. But coming back to yourself, Ollie, with, like, you know, doing this BD role. So as you said earlier, you spoke to a couple of friends working in the sort of space and getting a bit of an insight. What was the attraction for you to get into a sales role and a BD role? Like, what stood out to you, and what was your understanding back then of what it was compared to what it is now?
Yeah, good point. I think to say I was in HR systems, so I was working very closely with SAP SuccessFactors. So whilst I was in a HR role, I was very akin to sort of software and technology and how that worked. And actually was partnering quite closely with a consultant at the time doing sort of solution engineering, showing people demos, etc. on the tool. So taking that into sales, it was still quite a jump. And actually listening to some of my friends, learning what I did throughout the interview process. I think BDR is a stepping stone for a CAT executive, which is I still want to aim to get to. And actually the risk was that it was taking an actual drop on money initially from base salary. And obviously never being in a target driven or commission role before. Lots of people said, oh, you can chat, you've got the gift of the gab, etc. But actually it was me that needed to take the risk. Which I did. And whilst I think I knew what I was coming into. I think it's very KPI driven, metric driven, lots of phone calls, emails, etc. But actually, I think when you get to a point where you can manage that and you've got something that works for you, a rhythm, and it's repeatable, actually that comes quite easily in terms of metrics. And sort of I've got to a place now where those things are repeatable, and I've created a model which is repeatable. So I think where I want to get to is I'm on that path to get there. But yeah, there was a lot of, in the early days, a lot of apprehension and should I take the jump or should I just work my way up? But actually that drop in salary is a distant memory. So happy days.
I love that. And I want to, where you're talking about it being a KPI and driven metric, Ryan, you're right, it is. I want to come back to that in a moment, because again, there are some things that our listeners may be going through now because it's early days for them with some fears and anxieties. And I kind of want to figure out, like, how do you manage that? So I'll come back to that in a minute if that's right with you, Ollie. But James, coming back to you, whilst at SaaS Stock this week, met a lovely gentleman. You know, he's a top performing BDR. And he has an opportunity where his manager's taking some time off, right? And here's an opportunity for him to, you know, test the ropes of being a team lead. Now, admittedly, feeling a bit nervous about it and, you know, working with his peers and now, you know, kind of leading the team, not as a manager yet, but this is kind of like, you know, going for a test run. And he's a bit shook and he's a bit worried about it. And he's kind of asking me, like, okay, what things should I be preparing for? What should I be doing? How should I be working with the team, et cetera, et cetera. In your own experience, where you were going through that, taking on that team lead role, what bits of advice, or firstly, what was it like going from individual contributor to now having an element of being a team lead?
Yeah.
And what tips would you give to this young chap who's going to go through the same thing in a moment?
Yeah. I think it felt quite good to be able to know that I was working with a couple of like younger reps who had just like younger tenured reps ultimately had just kind of started out their career at Contata. And I think as someone that that generally likes to see people succeed and develop through sort of the lens of being able to impart my knowledge to help them do so. I think that's probably the one thing that I'd say is a great opportunity for anyone going into a team lead role, is to really sense how much reward and achievement you get from helping people develop and succeed. And using the time as a team lead role without any real kind of management responsibility to really hone that kind of development, coaching, and training element of the role. And being able to go, what do I know? What works for me? Being able to kind of take those repeatable and successful methods, especially if he's like a top performer, like looking internally and going, well, now what can I do to help others be kind of like me? I think seeing it as an opportunity to really hone in on your coaching skills is something that I would recommend. So not getting too caught up in the management and the one-to-ones, and I think being able to run training sessions and do a few core reviews, but just be a presence on the floor and like actually take a moment to kind of listen into calls and say, actually, you could have maybe done that a little better, or well done, that was really good. Maybe let's try this next time. Having that kind of like coaching presence, I think, as a team lead is the most important thing. That's the tips that I'd probably give to him.
Yeah, I love that. Those are some solid tips. And I think, you know, being in that position myself in the past as well, it can be very daunting, because where you are an individual contributor with on your team, and yes, you can be a top performer, there is this fear of, for some, and for me it was, okay, I'm one of you guys. I'm still one of you guys, but now I'm trying to lead this thing and I'm trying to help out. Mm. And I had initial maybe imposter syndrome, might be the word of, are they going to believe in me? Are they going to listen to me? Are they going to be open to me helping them out? But as you mentioned there, getting in the trenches and helping them do the things that they're currently doing, that's how you can kind of win their trust and build it with them. But, you know, in order to gain respect, you have to give a bit of respect back to them as well. And I went through a lot of failures and F-ups trying to figure that out. But yeah, eventually it gets there. But I think I kind of also said to him, I said, like, if your manager is entrusting you in this, then recognize that he also recognizes your skill set and potential. So kind of believe in yourself that you can do it. And the only way you're going to figure out if this is for you as a long-term career is just try it out. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect, but give a go and you'll learn things from that as well. And coming back to you, Ollie. So again, whilst at SaaS Stock and being a sales coach, some people come to me like a sales therapist. And one of the key themes for, you know, this year has been around the anxiety around having to perform and hit KPIs and hitting targets, and this relentless thing of, okay, let's try and smash out the month. And at the beginning of the month, we start at zero. And for a lot of people that aren't used to sales or had never worked in sales before, this in itself can bring up a lot of fears. You know, we're even to the point where 3 months into the role, they're like, I don't know if this is for me. I'm thinking about quitting, or I'm thinking about going to another company, or perhaps, you know, going in for a completely different department and role. How do you, sir, for somebody that is a top performer in the early days, how did you manage that anxiety, or if there was any sort of stress? And are there any tips that you could give to people that are maybe going through those hard times?
Yeah. Again, Neil can empathize there. That's sort of the apprehension I had when moving. I think whilst I hadn't had any sales experience, I think I was in quite a good position in the sense that I didn't have any preconceived ideas of what a BDR process looks like, how I might approach it. So really the step I took was just to throw myself in, understand the processes, and Contata's got some great processes and enablement in place, and really forget anything else and focus on what's worked before. And what's going to work moving forward. And on that, again, it's going to be timing for different people, but I joined at quite a nice period. I joined at the end of September going into October, and at Contata our financial year starts in Feb. So I really used those initial 3-4 months to get the processes on board, trial and error, find an approach that worked for me. So that when February came, start the new financial year, head down, and I've got a repeatable model that works. And really, that I think that's what's led me to be so successful. I think some couple of other tips is trial and speak to other top performers. I think obviously if that's worked for them, they're not doing anything out of the ordinary or different. They're just sticking to the process. They're making sure they're top of any dashboard in sight, whether it's metrics or opportunities and dollar creation, and really use that to live month by month. And if you have a good month, then take on the lessons learned and take that into the next month. Which really is all I've done. I think people come to me and say, "Oh, you must do something different." And no, it's sticking to process, sticking to metrics. And fortunately, that led me to hit my annual plan after 6 months. So it was huge. Yeah.
I love that. Thank you. And those are some solid tips as well. And I think, you know, James, coming back to you on the manager side. Mm-hmm. So another conversation I had this week where somebody is thinking about management and the manager kind of said to them is you need to really fall in love with the data. And she kind of said to me, he's like, what's your opinion on that? And I said, I'll be honest with you, in the early days and even to this day, I'm not very data driven. I know the data and what works and everything, but I'm not a big fan of it. I'm more, you know, the techniques and the performance side of it. And I had this conversation with Andy Laws a couple of months back as well. But what I said to them is, initially, when you're an individual contributor, you're looking on the input of your activity, of the number of dials, calls, etc. But over time, I learned you had to be also aware of the output of all of those things that you're doing. Right. So, you know, if you do X amount of calls or you bring X amount of meetings in, what is the conversion rate to qualified pipeline? And I said, ultimately, when I was an SDR, all I gave a damn about was, of the meetings that I book, which one of those converted into closed customers? And, you know, what can I put my names to? But in terms of data, like, what advice would you give to individual contributors or SDRs as to how to view their data, not just on the input, but also on the output and the work that they're doing? What advice would you give to them, or how would you tell them, or how would you advise them to fall in love with the data?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think you've got to... As a BDR, like, you've got to make sure that when you're kind of coming to work every day, you're kind of looking at, what do I need to do today to achieve success? And I think looking at kind of the big picture and seeing, right, last month I sent 2,000 emails and I made 1,100 calls, and I sent 500 LinkedIn messages. Out of all of those, if you can look at that month and then compare it to kind of what your performance was, then ultimately, you know, if you are being consistent in your achievement, then ultimately it becomes a bit of an internal competition. So if you've made kind of 1,100 calls and you go, do you know what, next month I'm going to see if I can do 1,300, because if I do 1,300, then ultimately I'm going to be able to see if I do an extra 200, could there be an extra kind of meeting out there for me? And I think that's what I kind of saw it as a BDR and as our manager, is that I like to see that my team are completing the most activities, but also in knowing that that's actually producing great output as well. I'd like to see data as a bit of an internal competition. How can I be at the top of the activity leaderboard? How can I make sure that I'm doing the most work that I can do? Because nobody wants to be at the bottom of any leaderboard, especially in sales. I think looking at if I'm at the top and then actually breaking down, okay, so you can then go, I'm doing the most amount of activity that I can do. And then you can start to break down from there, knowing I've done that part of the element of the job and the KPIs and the metrics. Now I can actually kind of start to take away, well, what's my open rate like? What's my reply rate like? What's my, what is my call tool time like? What is my connect rate like? And then you can start to kind of break that down. And from there, you can then get really granular as to, okay, from the amount of emails I sent, added 40% reply open rate, 3% reply rate, but all of those 3% replies, 80% of them were objections. You can then start to get more granular, and that's how coaching from a manager's perspective, but also an individual contributor's perspective, starts to align. Because you know, if I'm hitting my goals every day and I'm making it a competition and I'm winning that competition, then I know that I'm doing that piece there. But then you can start to actually kind of break it down and start to kind of identify for yourself where you may need coaching and help from your manager to achieve the outcomes like meetings booked, qualified pipe, closed revenue, because input and the metrics plus the quality of that kind of input, ultimately will equal the output that you're desiring, whether that's meeting booked, qualified pipe, or closed revenue.
I love that, so eloquently put. And I think, you know, the key takeaway that speaking to a lot of SDRs and SDR managers is initially you're told to do these sort of activities. And then you may even get to a point of like, why the hell am I doing this? Like, why do we have to do these activities and stuff? And it's really good to understand it's not just a case of doing it, but it's what will come off the back of it and that output. But then, like you said, figuring out your kind of go-to-market plan as an SDR or BDR as to how you're going to achieve success, how you're going to book those meetings, how you're going to help drive our business forward with your impact that you're doing day to day. So, you know, for SDRs and BDRs out there, I always encourage them to ask their managers, how did you get to those KPIs? How did you get to those benchmarks? Historically, if we look back a year ago, is that what we were doing? We're doing less or more? And that way the manager can say, well, look, here's kind of a blueprint of how we've succeeded up until today. This is kind of why we do these things, but here's an opportunity for yourself to try something new within that realm and see what you get off the back of it. Again, and as you mentioned, like nobody wants to be at the bottom of those dashboards and leaderboards. So Ollie, coming to yourself, another topic I hear from a lot of SDRs is the fear. Well, it's kind of like I say, comparison is the thief of joy. So somebody may come on board and they see their name at the bottom, or they see an Ollie at the top and they're like, how the hell am I going to get there? And my advice to them is try not to compare yourself to other people because they've gone through different paths and experiences to get to that point. But have you ever experienced that fear of, well, have you ever compared yourself to other people? And has it ever come to like your detriment? Or, you know, what advice would you give to people that are fairly new and they can't but help compare themselves to what they're seeing on LinkedIn or, you know, seeing on the dashboards? How do you manage that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think obviously being in a sales environment, there's dashboards and numbers essentially flying around. I think it's very easy to compare yourself to other people. I think the key point, as you mentioned, is on those dashboards, it doesn't say tenure. It doesn't say how long you've been at the doing sales, for instance. So I think you've just got to take it as face value. Yes, someone might be at the top 1 month. Are they going to be at the top next month? And as I said, as long as you're doing what you need to be doing on the ground and you're confident that you're putting the metrics in, then you've got to focus on that. Otherwise, 3 months, 6 months in, it is very easy to get bogged down with numbers, get bogged down with who's top performer, and you're just in a vicious cycle, and that will have a knock-on effect on when you get a chart on the phone. You're already thinking that you're not confident to take it, or you wish someone else was taking it as top performer. And a funny thing, people always say to me is, oh, I wouldn't like to do sales or the pressures and numbers. But I think take away the numbers, all you're doing each day is speaking to people. And we all do that down the pub or whatever. If you can just transfer that and relax and speak to people, rather than putting all this pressure on numbers, on where you're going to be, on where you need to be, the rest is a byproduct in my eyes.
I love that. And you're right, you know, like we're with sales, it could be the art, the science. And kind of when I was in SaaS Stock in Dublin this week and I was looking across the massive event floor with hundreds of salespeople, I felt in my element. I just said, all we do is just have conversations with each other. We chat like salespeople can chat for England. Trust me, the amount of conversations we had. But it's having those meaningful conversations. And yes, if you focus on the quality of those conversations and the people you talk to, the numbers will come, you know. And to your point, I love that on the dashboard, it doesn't have how long you've been doing that role. you know, but it also doesn't tell you how many times that person has failed or gone through errors in order to refine their approach and become better at what they're doing, right? And kind of thinking it from a management point, so like sticking with you, Ollie, like James, you've mentioned, you know, training, coaching and managing and those things. Ollie, like the things that I used to get wrong as a manager back in the day was I used to get in the way of my reps, right? By some of the meetings that I used to put in their calendar, I used to be that horrible micromanager talking about the metrics and the numbers and why haven't you like logged it in the CRM? If it's not in the CRM, it doesn't exist. But as an individual contributor, how best can a manager make use of your time during the week and what is important for you for them to be there for and to kind of sometimes just get out of the way? What's that for you, sir?
Sorry, Neil, was that to me?
Yes, sorry.
Sorry, I thought you were going down to James. No, it's a good point. I think from my experience, I came from, like I said, Nomad Foods. And there I was lucky enough to have a manager that was a director. It happened sort of by accident that he wasn't around all the time. There wasn't that chance to be micromanaged. There wasn't pressures on me. But I actually quite like that. And moving into Kantata, when I first met James, it was very much, can I transfer that style of management into here? But fully appreciating that this is a totally different industry. There's going to be loads of stuff I don't know. But as much as possible, I like to just go away, trial and error, bring stuff to the table, bring suggestions to James to move forward. Yeah. And James has been great at that. And I think that's one of the keys to the success. I think there's been times naturally in a role like this where you might get carried away month to month and you're doing well, but then you start to forget the processes, you forget what made you book those many meetings. So I think it's essential to, yeah, have a less of a sort of focus on one-to-ones and management, but actually when there is times where you have taken a dip, it often takes someone else to tell you, actually, that where's all the success gone? Where's all that process gone? So that would be my biggest tip is try and build a relationship with the manager that you've got autonomy and you've got chances to trial and error. But you know that when stuff does shit starts hitting the fan, for instance, you've got someone there to hold you accountable and make you better.
So I think I'd add to that a little bit as well from kind of like the manager perspective. I think seeing success in the early stages obviously gives you a lot of confidence as a manager. And seeing someone pick up process and understand methodology and just throw themselves straight into it, but then start to actually become really successful in the very first few months. It is easy to kind of take your hands off and kind of say, hey, look, you kind of do what you need to do. And I think that's kind of how Ollie and I really worked together effectively was we both knew that the way that Ollie was going to work best was that we knew there was a sense of accountability from both of us, that we were going to hold each other to account for the actions that we were defining, that the trainings we were holding. But we made sure to use all of our kind of one-to-ones and all of our in-person time effectively to make sure that we were communicating any kind of areas for coaching and any areas for development. And I think one of the biggest things that has made Ollie so successful in this relationship as well is the ability to hold his hands up and say, actually, I think I'm falling down the hole a little bit here. I think I'm kind of losing a little bit of that rhythm and momentum, and self-identifying areas for opportunity development, bringing those to me and saying, hey, James, like, this is not working at the moment. I think we need to have a chat. And I think as a BDR, it's so important to strip away that kind of ego and say, hey, actually, I still do need help and I still do need advice. Like, it's good to obviously go away and seek advice from LinkedIn and craft your own and craft your own kind of style. But sometimes it's you've got to strip away the ego and go, do you know what? Even though I'm one of the global top performers, I still need someone to kind of say, hey, maybe you need to try and do this a little bit differently and try and steer them. So I think it's important to kind of be autonomous, and as a manager, kind of recognize when a rep and an individual contributor wants to be autonomous.
Yeah.
But making sure that you're kind of identifying opportunities, but ensuring that you give them the trust in you that they can come to you with coaching opportunities as well.
I love that. And you know, sometimes we do have to swallow our prides when things aren't working out, and asking for help is, you know, a sign of strength. And I found, you know, being a former manager, if people come to me saying like, Neil, I need some help, shit's not working out, I'm trying to figure this stuff out, I'm like, I respect that person more because they've approached me, and I'm like, cool, happy to help. You're open to being coached, you're open to being helped. I'll give you 110% towards that. And just like, I'd love to quickly touch on, so you've obviously spoken about there's managing, there's training, and there's coaching. And again, coming off the back of SaaS Talk, some people are thinking about leadership as a future career path. And they're just like, I looked at my manager's calendar the other day and it was like, what the hell? Like, there are so many things going on. And I'm like, you're not just doing your role anymore, but you're helping 8 to 10 different people. How do you manage your time between managing, training, and coaching within a working week across different headcount?
It's been a journey. It's definitely taken a lot of trial and errors as to kind of how I manage my calendar. I think that's also something that has taught me is, as a BDR and even coming into the management role, is I at the end of every quarter look at my calendar and think, is this an effective way of managing my time? And I try and tell my BDRs to do that as well. Have a look at your calendar, because when you get stale, things generally aren't going to work as good as they might have done. And it kind of is always nice to have a bit of a fresh change. So the thing that's working for me at the moment is I found myself recently not having enough time to complete kind of project work and a lot of change going on in the organization at the moment. So being able to contribute to that change and kind of having internal meetings outside of one-to-ones, training, development areas to kind of work with other, obviously, managers and leaders in the organization to kind of enact that kind of change and areas of the business that need improvement. And that, combined with obviously the one-to-ones and working out kind of where I need to spend the time with my team as well, all started to become a little bit too much. So I thought, the thing that's working most effectively for me at the moment is having most of my one-to-ones completed by Tuesday. So all of my one-to-ones complete by Tuesday. We have a training session on Tuesday morning as well. That enables me and the team to kind of come together early in the week and say, right, what have we got on this week? What are you feeling good about? What do you think might not be working for you? How does your pipeline look at the moment? How can we kind of work together to help you progress stuff? And kind of get people kind of like in the right mindset to kind of enter the rest of the week.
Yeah.
And I think if you've got a team kind of like of a relative size that you can kind of do that and spread it across kind of 2 days, then I'd highly recommend doing so, because it just kind of helps you set up the week for success. And then I've just made sure that I've committed more time recently to coaching as well. Like, I've put two-hour-long coaching office hours in my diary. So I've ultimately said to the team, hey, look, I'm dedicating those 2 hours a week for you to kind of drop in and say, hey, James, like, what can I do this? Can we listen to a few calls? Can we work on a couple of emails? Can we work multi-threading? And it's the same with me. I'll also, if I identify coaching opportunities, I'll put people into those slots as well. And I think that was only like in the last quarter that I've done that. Nice. And it's been really effective in helping kind of everyone sense a little bit more of a coaching culture and kind of enabling them to understand that outside of our core training sessions, there's still time in my day to make sure that that we're all getting better together.
I love that. Carving those hours in for coaching can make a huge impact to your team's performance, like progression, and also helps you get a better understanding as to, you know, their strengths and weaknesses. But it builds that trust as well, where they can come to you with, I want you to listen to this call. I want you to review this cadence. I want to know, how can I get better? And, you know, a key theme whilst, I don't know, for the last year that I've heard from a lot of leaders is, I just don't have the time for it. And I'm like, do you really not have the time, or is it that you don't want to do it, or you don't know how to do it, or how to implement it? And it kind of comes into the latter. Because understandably, as managers, you're freaking busy. You're not only helping your team, but you're reporting to other departments. And you have to be able to manage your time so you don't burn yourself out as well. And you need to make sure, I think the question I'm always asking those leaders and managers, like, who's coaching you as well, whilst you're coaching all these other people? But coming in terms of progression, Ollie, towards yourself, somebody who's, you know, looking to make that next step within your career, a lot of SDRs that I speak to, that's the main thing they want to do. They want to progress. They want to move on to that next step, Ollie, and that's something you're about to embark on. But a question that I got asked on this VIP coach in Dublin was, what things should I be doing to gear up for that next step and that promotion? And how should I be working with my manager to help that happen? So Ollie, for yourself, where you're soon to be taking this next step, and in a year which has been freaking tough for the industry, I'm not going to lie, right? There's been a lot of fears and going around. But how have you best prepared yourself, and how have you utilized James in order to help you succeed at taking that next step, Ollie?
Very much on the path to get into AE, where I want to get to at the moment. So it's quite a timely conversation to be having around what I'm doing and how I'm setting myself up. I think in terms of James' involvement, it's being deadly honest with where I want to get to, what the timelines are, and for him to be realistic to me as to whether those timelines are right, what I should be doing in those timelines to make it happen. And for him to be advising on not only who I should be speaking to, but giving me a platform to speak to the relevant people. I think there's a great progression plan at Kantata to get you to AE, put you in a position to be an AE. But actually, for me, it's rather than just sticking to what the advice is, it's what more can I be doing? And personal brand has been massive for me from right through from university to Nomad to here. So I think, like on the phones in the sales world, every conversation is key. So any chance you get to speak to C-suite, sales managers, VP, go to them with suggestions, feedback. What are you seeing done well? Where do you think you could value? But also put yourself in a position where you can start to do stuff or the role that you want to get into, do that role before you get that role. So can you start to do stuff in the field? And James has been great in giving me opportunities working with AEs to actually take the discovery calls, take the demos, and get feedback on that. Because I think the certifications are great, but they're really the theory behind what you've got to do. Like I've said to Jake previously, you can do umpteen numbers of role plays internally until you get into the field and doing it with a prospect. You're never going to learn what your style is, how to get the outcomes you want, how to ask the difficult questions. So to summarize, because I appreciate I've rambled there, I think it's personal brand. It's go the extra mile and be honest and a continued dialogue with your manager to keep you on track.
I love that. You're so right. And it's kind of like the analogy of, you can go to university to learn the theory on a master's degree that you want to do, but until you actually get into the working practice or firm, you're not going to know what it's like. And I encourage SDRs to either shadow their future counterparts or their account executives, run parts of that discovery call, you know, do the follow-up, be the person that helps send the proposal post meeting, so you can get a taste of what is it really going to be like. So I think that's some solid advice. But I know we're kind of coming up for time, and it's been an absolute pleasure to have you both on, and this is what I like to call a dynamic duo episode. So we've got some real golden nuggets here. So there is a question that I normally ask at the end of this, and I'm going to try something a little bit different. So I'm going to start with James. What one bit of advice would you give to a younger version of yourself who's about to embark on this journey of being a BD then going into management? What would that one bit of advice be to that person, James?
I think I would say to myself, yes, we're in a target-driven role. Yes, it's important to make sure you're hitting target. But at the end of every day, reflect and ask, did I put my people first? Mm. And the pressures of sales, the pressures of management, the pressures of target can sometimes sweep you away, and you can forget the core of kind of what you're there for, and that's to lead people and make sure that they're being led in a way that's going to make them successful. And I think reflecting on that every day and saying, did I put my team first today, is super important to knowing that you're an effective not only manager but an effective leader. And that's something that I've learned over the last year is if you put your people first, the results will always show.
Solid. Thank you very much for that, James. Now, Ollie, I want to do something a little bit different with you here, sir. So obviously we've asked James to talk about giving advice to like his past self. But let's imagine for a minute, in a year's time, you're going to watch this episode back and you're going to see the younger version of yourself. What advice would you give to your future self to make sure they stay or they get to where they want to be? As standing here today, what advice would you give to your future self?
Great question. I think just take risks. I think with risks, there's, it's cliche, but there's reward. I think whilst you're still young, you've got less responsibilities. I think like you said at the start of the podcast, if you take a risk and it goes wrong, get another job, and go from there. You're always going to learn. And if I didn't take the risk of moving industry, then I wouldn't be sort of achieving and getting where I want to be. So I think that's would be my advice, but also keep smashing it.
You heard that, future Ollie. Remember these wise words said by your younger self. All right, Jens, thank you so much. And James, just quickly come to you. Are there any kudos or shout outs that you'd like to give out on today's show?
I think first kudos obviously has to go to Ollie for coming into the business and absolutely smashing it, becoming the global top performer, but also for throwing himself deep into his learnings, for reflecting, but also for standing strong in knowing what he wants, when he wants it, and how he wants it. Because I respect that more than anything, and it helps me guide that success even better. Kudos to my team for keeping us at 100% for the whole year so far. They've done a pretty smashing job of that. So kudos to every single person that's working their butt off every single day to do so. And then, yeah, kudos to Kantata, actually, for helping us kind of be successful and giving us the opportunities that we have so early on in our sales careers, like becoming a manager after a year and hopefully Ollie soon to be an AE after kind of like a year to 18 months. Like those kind of opportunities are definitely going to be kind of looked well upon as we enter kind of the next parts in our career.
Cool beans. That's a whole loaf and slice of hashtag sales love there, James. Thank you very much. And Ollie, for yourself, are there any shout outs or kudos that you'd like to give today, sir?
Yeah, of course. I'll keep it short. I don't want to repeat too much on what James says, but obviously, firstly, to James, I mean, he's been there, done it, got the t-shirt of what I'm doing now. And actually, when I interviewed with a different manager, as James said. So to come into the business, learn from someone that's done it, hold me accountable, be honest, have some quite frank conversations, which is my style anyway. I think he's put me in a position to succeed and to really get where I want to get to. So I think that's massive kudos of learning from someone that smashed it. I think obviously Kantata putting us in the position, echo everything that James said. And then I think the final one to call out is my good mate Trakesh Iswar. So again, he's the cat executive here at Kantata, and he was the one that encouraged me over a beer to take the step. So big shout out to him, and he's helped me no end to know the role and smash the role like he did. So yeah.
Love it. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And a big thank you to our listeners, watchers, and subscribers. As mentioned with all of our guests, their LinkedIn URLs will be in the show notes. So if you want to connect with James and Ollie, pick their brains, or kind of expand upon anything they've spoken about today, feel free to reach out to them. And if you're watching this or listening to this on your local podcast platform or YouTube, please make sure that you give us a like, rating, and subscribe. For James and Ollie from Kantata, it's been an absolute pleasure having you as a dynamic duo on the show. I wish you all the best of luck. Thank you for giving us some time today. And most importantly, gents, happy selling.
Cheers, Neil.
Come on, Neil.
Thank you for listening to the SDR Disco Call podcast today. We would like to get this message out to more and more sales development reps, so please like, comment, and share in your local podcast provider. If you don't want to miss a show, you can always send a blank email to SDR Disco Call, one word, at bcast, which is bcast.email, and you'll be added to our mailing list. We're also on the lookout for new guests, so if you work in the world of sales development as an SDR, BDR, MDR, or ADR, and feel that you have an important message or story to share, feel free to email us at podcast@happyselling.io, and we'd love to have you on board.